You are listening to the Ivy Podcast. Learn from the thought leaders in areas of strategy, innovation, negotiation, and all things leadership. We interview the Ivy League, Fortune 100, and top startups. Now, here's your host, John Karsibayev.
On this episode, I welcome Don Cox, who has over 30 years of experience in technology. Currently serving as the Chief Information Security Officer at Mednax, the physician-led healthcare organization headquartered in Sunrise, Florida. Don is responsible for cyber operations and engineering, identity access management, disaster recovery, business continuity planning, and risk and compliance for the company. Selected as a peerless community, 29 highly influential CISOs of 2020. Please welcome Don Cox. Don, can you share with us a little bit more about the company and what is your role within the organization?
Sure. So Mednax is a 40-year-old company, and we are doctors that work in the maternal fetal medicine space, the OBGYN space, basically pediatrics. And my job as the CISO is to support and protect the data that these doctors use to help patients and to eventually build for service.
In terms of information security in general, I'm curious, what are the latest trends that you're currently observing or researching and looking to utilize and implement within your organization in the near future?
Yeah, there's a number of trends that I'm looking to implement. So, to begin with, looking at machine learning, some people refer to it as artificial intelligence, and how we can use that to automate and stop some of the more easily recognized threat events. Looking at threat intelligence and how we can include that into our tools and help us maybe proactively stop things from happening. Looking at how do I implement a full-time pen testing team, whether it's internal or external to the organization. If the threat actors are constantly looking at us and trying to find ways into the organization, then we should be doing the same thing. There's some really good services out there that we're using to kind of give us that picture. And also looking at how do we secure and manage this new remote workforce? How do we keep up with all the alerts that are happening that we need to identify if they are an employee that's accessing the system, or if it's a threat actor accessing the system, or if it's an employee's computer that's been taken over by a threat actor? How do we detect all of the abnormal behavior? So that leads to the user behavioral analytics and using that.
You've touched upon some of the advanced technologies, machine learning, AI, and so forth. I'm curious, with COVID and all of these unprecedented times that we're going through right now, what has been so far your biggest adjustment when it comes to cybersecurity within the organization when everyone's shifting to remote? Any practical recommendations that you can share with other executives?
Yeah, the biggest shift we've seen, right, is people that where the organization, and this is not just myself, but other organizations, they've predominantly been, everybody needs to work from the office. And so they have a desktop instead of a laptop. Or they don't know how to use VPN, or they don't know how to use Citrix or some other virtual desktop technology. So we're seeing a need for organizations to start thinking about the next pandemic or the next, if we can't go to the office, what does it look like, and how do people get access, and how do they stay productive? From that, right, how do we ensure that the devices that people are using from home are monitored and managed in some way? So if I'm not giving them a corporate device to use, then their home computer, how do I make sure that they're meeting minimum standards, right? How do you get the employee to even agree to let you monitor their device? How do we make sure that the work that's being done is, maybe through a Citrix, and we're managing all the security in the back end, so whatever device is trying to touch it doesn't matter. So we're kind of seeing that.
When it comes to innovation, especially during these times when you know, if we talk about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, these times are all about kind of that lowest level when you're mostly concerned about, you know, the safety and the basic needs. But as you lead, you know, the information security or, you know, division of your organization, you know, I'm pretty sure there's continuous need for innovative ways to solve problems, address, you know, the tools or methodology that you guys utilize. I'm curious from your standpoint, what strategies have you deployed that consistently help you come up with innovative ways to solve certain problems or services that your company offers?
Sure. So as a CISO, I'm constantly meeting with vendors or reading the information that vendors provide about their products. I also have a roadmap, and I have a document that says, you know, where gaps may exist or some limited capabilities exist. And so I'm always looking for things that could fill in those voids in the environment. But the strategy for me really is to, one, using a risk register, deal with the riskiest activities that the organization faces, and either with my team and or referrals from other CISOs or other recommendations by like Gartner, Forrester, RSA, you know, whoever it may be, come up with what we could use in order to meet the need. And then from there, it's and this is something I've done in a number of organizations. I've stood up kind of a outside the organization research and development capability, so people can go out there and they can play in sandboxes and not hurt the corporate network, but they can learn about tools and learn about its capabilities and run viruses out there and not hurt anything. So, you know, we look for people to pilot things there, get them to work, see if it'll fit in our environment, and then maybe we'll do a short proof of concept or proof of value to the organization. And you know, all I tell my team is, I don't care if you fail, just fail fast, you know, so that we can move in a different direction.
You've briefly mentioned the kind of the research and development group that you stood up within the organization. To take that a little bit further, I spent a lot of time with other executives, you know, within, you know, the different organizations from Fortune 500 to smaller startups. And a lot of them, you know, utilize concepts such as chaos engineering or equivalent, which provides them with opportunities to run, you know, create certain prototypes or run certain simulations when it comes to outages or any other threat events that, you know, impact the productivity organization. What strategies do you have in place that lets you prepare your organization and proactively plan for some of these unexpected events?
Yeah, so not specifically talking about MedNext, because any good security practitioner wouldn't divulge their secrets to the public.
Absolutely.
yeah, I've seen a number of capabilities that exist today that are very promising that can simulate attacks against the organization, right? So you can either take what is the most current avenue that a threat actor gets in. So, you know, there's a methodology that a hacker uses, right? And we'll, you know, the white hat hacker, black hat hacker, gray, whatever it may be. There's a methodology they use, right? They find a target, they scan it, they look for vulnerabilities, they sit and wait. So, you know, taking all of that information, and then these companies that I'm learning about and meeting with, have the ability without damaging my environment to come in and say, okay, I can do this because there's a vulnerability. It's known. It's a, you know, Windows. It's a Microsoft Windows patch vulnerability. And once I get into this device, it has admin credentials baked into it, so I can move laterally. And then I can go from there to here to get to this. And then if I disrupt this, I've just shut down your entire business, right? Or you don't have access to your data anymore because ransomware has been deployed. So those are some promising and pretty cool technologies that I'm looking at that would definitely help protect the environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I could definitely relate to some of these concepts you shared with us. And as I spend time with other, you know, information security officers or, you know, the CIOs of other organizations, one topic that consistently does come up is, especially during these times, you know, keeping the employees motivated, especially with a lot of companies going through, you know, the furloughs, the downsizing and layoffs and so forth. What has helped you through this period so far to keep your, you know, employees motivated?
Yeah, so communication, constant communication. We use Microsoft Teams as one of our collaboration tools. Been very successful for us. And I have a team chat that has been up for almost 15 weeks now. And the entire team has access to it. We'll post things like every morning, everybody says good morning, and they put a goofy picture up. Somebody will come across an article, will share it. I constantly put things out there to praise if I get word from other groups that somebody did a good job, I'll bring it up in the group there. I may have a here's a picture, give me a quote. We've actually had we call them happy hours, online happy hours at the end of the day, where mm-hmm. everybody had to wear a funny hat, or another one where you had to show a picture of yourself as a baby, and so. Just staying in touch with everybody and being there for them, thanking them individually and as a group. The other thing is, you know, with the capabilities like Uber Eats and some of the other ones, you know, everybody can order their own lunch and then we can have lunch together for a day and then maybe do some training. So been doing those things.
Yeah, it sounds like, you know, definitely that empathy and the human element is of utmost importance during these times, and something that you had shared as well is, yeah, we're all in this. Nobody could have predicted that, and I think it's, you know, just being compassionate towards, you know, what everyone is going through, especially that shift to remote. Nobody, you know, a lot of people work well in that environment. Some struggle. So some of the examples that you're giving are, you know, on point.
Yeah.
Have you guys, are you still fully remote, or you guys started bringing workforce back?
We are still remote. We're located, well, all throughout the United States, right? And so our physicians and clinicians have been on the front lines of the COVID epidemic the entire day. So, you know, they're our heroes, and we appreciate them. I mean, they're still out there delivering babies for moms and dads and, you know, taking care of patients and kids. So definitely have to give some kudos and respect what they do. But as far as like the corporate staff goes, we're actually looking at, you know, what does coming back to work look like and how are we going to do that to make sure that all the employees are safe and, you know, make sure that the company work still gets done.
Right. And, you know, speaking of kudos, I mean, you guys deserve as much as well, supporting that on the frontline workers and who are helping through all of these great times. So, definitely thank you guys for everything that you do. Speaking of kind of adjusting to bringing the workforce back, what do you think would be the biggest challenges as a lot of companies try to, you know, go back from this, from the current setup to try to bring employees back into, you know, physical locations and so forth?
So there's everything from what government regulations are going to be put in place, right? Do you have to take everybody's temperature? Can you force people to go home if you sense that they're sick? Just how to deal with all those HR type issues. What is going to be the distancing requirement and the things that you have to put in place in order to protect employees, right? So example, you go to the supermarket nowadays or any other store and there's plastic up all over the place between you and the other person. And some places where you have to wear a mask or, you know, where don't have to wear a mask. So trying to figure out what that right balance is, and be able to provide the environment for people to come back and work safely and then be able to deal with an individual if for some reason, you know, they happen to get infected by COVID. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the things we're looking at.
Right, right, right. To switch topics a little bit here, we as ProSource, part of the service offering that we provide is partnering with technology organizations on helping them find, you know, the very niche IT talent, whether that's site reliability engineers or, you know, data scientists and so forth. Curious from your standpoint, what are some of the, you know, in-demand sets that you've been looking for and which ones have been the most challenging to find. I'm more interested to hear the strategies that you deploy to attract that very niche top talent to your teams.
Sure. So the toughest people to find these days are what people refer to as DevSecOps engineers, right? So these are people with development experience or knowledge, and they also have a security background. So very in demand. I actually had somebody that I call them these individuals, scary bright individuals, and he was just absolutely amazing, and he got stolen by a company with three letters. It's way bigger than we are. So trying to find those people, you can find somebody that's a developer that wants to be in security, and you have to, or you find somebody in security that wants to be a developer. So even like the more senior security people, just geographically trying to find somebody, the area is so saturated with need that it's hard to find that really, great senior security engineer. And then keep them because they're there a year and then somebody else is trying to steal them away for another $10,000 or $15,000 a year. So I think COVID has actually opened us up to being more receptive to people working remote instead of being on site, showing that it could be successful. We started in the past looking at trying to hire from other places. So, as a CISO, and this is not just Mednex, this is other places, I would partner with companies like yourself and other firms. And I'd say, here's the requirements that I have. Here's like our culture, here's what we think a good fit would be, personality, different kinds of things. And so from there, it's working with an individual like yourself to have two or three candidates that are very strong. Mm-hmm. And then, with the COVID, having the interview through either Zoom or Teams or Skype or something else, it's just as effective as sitting in a room with them. So that's been a blessing.
Right, and absolutely. And I can definitely relate to these challenges that you're going through right now, because we work with a lot of different companies of various size on specifically that type of skill set. And indeed, current times, being able to offer remote opportunities have definitely opened up a lot more avenues for companies as Mednex and others. But it's still really good security, cybersecurity engineers and so forth, they're not necessarily sitting on the bench, and it's a continuous dialogue with a lot of very talented skill set that requires a lot of, proactive, telling the story of the company that you're trying to sell and, the leadership that's part of that and the types of projects that they have going on. So that's definitely worked well for us to be able to deliver some of those, very in-demand skill set. When hiring for your teams, the candidates that interview with you, just curious to get a kind of a glimpse into that interview process. Do you tend to get creative with it? Do you keep them pretty traditional? And aside from that technical, domain expertise, what do you look for in terms of responses when you hear them?
Yeah. So many years ago, I read a book, Shackleton's Way. And in it, Shackleton, it was an explorer of Antarctica or the polar caps, and he would ask three questions. One is, why do you want to be on the ship in this exploration? Two, can we get along with you? And three, can you get along with us? And so I asked those three questions, right? I'm the CISO, and I shouldn't be asking technical questions. That should be up to my team. So I kind of asked those three questions, and I see what their response is. But on the flip side of that, technically, there's some really good resources on the World Wide Web that here are some questions that a senior engineer should know or a novice engineer should know, and here's the training they should have. And so asking them, what is TLS? What is SSL? They should know what those things are as basics. There's also some really good sites out there where you can give people a scenario, maybe 10 questions. Here's the scenario. What would you do in this kind of situation to kind of judge their problem-solving skills? There's a big concern these days about just generations that exist and, the lack of problem solving skills on people. So kind of look for that. And then there it's really, it's the fit, right? Can we work with you? Can you work with us? And then I'm a big proponent of finding somebody that fits and then training them so good that they don't want to leave, right? Just treat them the best that I can. But knowing that I've trained them so good that they can go anywhere in their future.
Right, right, absolutely. And, you know, we as part of what we provide, spend a lot of time with, you know, the leadership on the teams that interview, because at the end of the day, it's a two-way interview for the candidates as well to really understand what they're stepping into, what types of personalities tend to succeed within that particular environment. Because there's, you know, all the tools that you can use to validate that technical skill set. But when it comes to the soft skills or the personalities and, you know, the culture, it's a task. It's a challenge to find that right match.
The hardest thing to find is an individual that doesn't see themselves as security, but sees themselves as part of the team, right? So something I try to stress with the individuals I work with, get out and meet your peers and partners. And, you know, yes, for security, but I think security is becoming everybody in the organization needs to be security smart. So, you know, we're putting development, I bring people from the organization into security on a, you know, if they want to, an hour or two a week, come learn our tools, come learn technology. I mean, it seems like everybody wants to get into security. So there's really no lack of people of interest. And I give them the opportunity. I send them to training. I a lot of it's online and free and those kinds of things. So I benefit from the vendors.
Right. Absolutely. That's very, you know, that's a great strategy, especially on internal opportunities for others. And as part of what I've seen lately, you know, a great emergence of that, the training that we've been providing to the, you know, very talented technically candidates who are lacking on that kind of that soft skill set, not only from interview perspective, but also, you know, just the general, emotional intelligence perspective. And so that's, I've seen a lot of kind of upward trends from that training standpoint lately. Don, last but not least, I'm curious, what are you currently reading, or is there one book that you always recommend to others, and why?
All right. So thinking about this question, I'm constantly reading LinkedIn. I don't have a presence on Twitter, Instagram, anything else. I just LinkedIn. I look for articles that other CISOs and other CIOs or CEOs post that would be relevant to security, or just, you know, how to do IT better. I'm constantly, you know, reading the Panaman blog, Tech Target, security intelligence reports from all over the place, a whole CSO online. I mean, just a whole host of information security, dark reading, just to, you know, what's out there. I get feeds, I get information from all of these groups. I do get information from my team. I get information from vendors. That's another thing we do, is if we come across something, we'll share it with the rest of the team. But reading books. So the book that I've read recently, and I have to, you know, give kind of a tip of the hat to a guy named Gary Hayslip. Him and some other individuals have come up with the CISO Desk Reference Guide. And volume 2 has either just come out or it's been out for a little while. But he also has the Essential Guide to Security for Small to Medium-Sized Businesses and some other books. And Gary has a very practical way of implementing security. All of his terms and you know, his recommendations are definitely worth reading and having in your repertoire. So I would definitely recommend those. And if anybody knows of a good book that I should be reading, then via LinkedIn, send me something. I guess, you know, one other book that I've been reading, so Risk. There's been some real significant advances in conversations on risk in an environment as it pertains to security. So I've been doing a lot of reading on that. There's the, I think it's called the FAIR capability. Yep. And also reading about DevOps, right? So the Phoenix project and the Unicorn project, it's always good to learn from the success and or failures of others.
Yeah, those are great. Those are classics. Yeah, definitely share. Thank you for sharing that information. That's, you know, we'll, for our listeners, we'll make the titles and, you know, the authors of these books available in the episode notes. Don, I want to thank you so much for your time today. I know how busy you are sharing the insights. I personally learned quite a bit through this conversation. I want to stay in touch and, you know, perhaps we can do, you know, another recording in a couple of years to see how much had changed. So we definitely appreciate your time today.
Yeah, absolutely. If you wait a couple of years, it might be too long, maybe 6 months.
That's right.
as much as things change around here. Whew.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.